That's Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers with Johnny's Blue. Lee Morgan on trumpet, Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Bobby Timmons on piano, Jimmy Merritt on bass, and Art Blakey himself, the great master, on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Lutrice Lead, and it's Thursday, May the 23rd, and we have a bit of talking to do today about two very important subjects. In the second half of the program, the president, in about an hour, will be making a speech to military types at the military academy, and it is about counterterrorism and related subjects. He, of course, we don't have a printout of the speech. We wouldn't know exactly what he's going to say, but we do have some clues based on what the projection is that is he will be talking about. So we'll get that in the second half of the program. But first, I want to talk about a subject that is very near and dear to me, and that is the issue of school closings, and Chicago being one of the major points of reference on this particular subject. Just yesterday, the city of Chicago announced that it was going to close, initially it wanted to close 54 schools, but they granted a last-minute reprieve to 4 schools, so now they will be closing 50, and it is supposed to indicate to the folks in Chicago that the city, under Rahm Emanuel, the former chief of staff of President Obama, has a heart. Well, it did not register well with the folks, and they're fighting. Now, what is important about this particular struggle is not just that its focal point is Chicago, but that it is a pattern that is nationwide and has picked up extraordinary speed under the Obama administration. So far, more than 4,000 schools nationwide have been shut down under this president, who is so pro-education. And that definitely gives a clue as to what the administration intends to do with public education, its attitude toward public education, and its attitude also about the desires of, let's put it in its strictest terms, the desires of the electorate. This current struggle is occurring in the president's home turf. He has said nothing about it. In fact, they pretend it doesn't even exist. And the fact that the mayor of the city of Chicago is his former chief of staff, one would wonder why it is that the president cannot in some way intervene, because it is so devastating what is going on. I want to give you a sense of how people are feeling in Chicago, and you will hear three different excerpts today. The first would be a 9-year-old third grader named Eshawn Johnson, and he is talking about what it means to shut down the school he currently is in. And you would be surprised at the clarity he has about the issue. Then you will hear a group talking about, parents talking about what they are prepared to do with respect to the shutting down of schools in their neighborhood. And finally, the last clip would be from just yesterday, the Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis addressing a rally downtown on their way to City Hall. So here we go.
I am 9 years old. I am 9 years old. I am in third grade at Marcus Garvey. like you to go to?
Mount Vernon. I haven't been there, but from his description of how it is, I think it's pretty bad because they do not like us. So if you send us behind a gang territory where the kids don't like us, what do you think is going to be? Violence or safety? They're saying you're trying to create safety for the kids, but you're just sending them in danger.
Sean, you are a very articulate young man. You really are.
Sean for mayor.
Absolutely.
Sean for mayor.
Thank you so very much.
But we'll be in the front of them the first day of school.
Yes.
Now, let's see what y'all gonna do. This neighborhood needs this school. West Pullman is a historical landmark in this community. Why our kids cannot get the fruits of those historical values that's in this community. Y'all bringing this community back together. Start with the schools. Start with the people that's already live here. We are homeowners, and we want our kids to go to a school where they're safe. We shouldn't have to have police escorts to escort our kids to school when they can walk right out of their doors or their houses and go right to school without a police escort.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Nina Stonerford. I'm a parent from West Pullman Elementary School. It's time to stand up now. Stop taking our schools. Hands off our schools. This is our schools, our children, and our babies that you're hurting. Let's get your hands off our school. Ron Emanuel, take your hands off our school.
Are not the solution to solving our education problems in this city. Shutting down schools does not improve education policy because buildings do not educate our students. Well-resourced, supported teachers and staff do that. School closings are not popular and are not the solution taxpayers want. That is why thousands of people, parents, students, clergy, educators, civil rights activists, and community groups have been engaging in direct action all across the city. Hundreds of parents and teachers at the targeted schools have been consistent in their testimony on why their schools shouldn't be destroyed. Stakeholders have presented CPS with evidence of improved test scores, school utilization, and the viability of their schools, but all of this has been ignored. The mayor has said no more negotiations. Board members have been trotted out to parrot CPS talking points as if they have already voted on the matter. There is no democracy here. These hearings, most likely sham events, are designed to provide therapy to people impacted by their decisions. So if the mayor and his handpicked corporate school board will not listen to us, we must find those who will. This is why Chicago Teachers Union will launch a comprehensive and aggressive political action campaign in the coming weeks. We intend to continue our advocacy against school closings, turnarounds, and phase-outs until the board rubber stamps this plan on May 22nd. And on May 23rd, we're going right back out in the streets. Along with our community allies and partners, we intend to, number one, launch a citywide voter registration and education campaign. We want to put at minimum 100,000 new voters on the Chicago rolls. We are going to go door to door in the neighborhoods where people's schools have been shut down and their jobs have been lost because of this administration. We will be hosting, who wants to run for mayor? Who wants to be an alderman? And who wants to run for statewide office political education boot camps where we will help vet people interested in public service? We do not intend to wait until 2015 to do this. We intend to join the efforts to find qualified people right now. So if anyone out there wants to stand up for our students, for parents, for educators on a strong research-based education agenda in this city, and will pledge to fight the status quo. Visit our CTU website, www.ctunet.com, for dates of these trainings.
Well, that is a plan of action. And I wanted to draw your attention to two things. When you heard these three clips, they all occurred in three different places. But it is a grassroots movement. We have the young child, you heard, Ashawn Johnson. He's out in the street with a bunch of other people rallying downtown. The parents are in their community rallying in front of the local school. And Karen Lewis, the union president, teachers union president, talking at the union headquarters. The sad part of it is she also talked about it implicitly. When a union says that they are going to undertake a political movement, they're going to launch a movement seeking, in effect, brand new leadership at the local level, the implication is there isn't an effective leadership, not even on a situation, an issue this vital to the future of the city of Chicago and to the educational futures of these children. So it is a different tact, but they mean to register 100,000 new voters in order to grow, organically grow, new leadership to protect the social and political and economic interests of the vast majority of working class and working poor people in the city of Chicago. And this is the president's backyard. Now, what is happening in Chicago? As I said, the initial number of schools to be closed was 54, but they decided, oh, well, they look a little bit conciliatory and give back four of the schools. So now they will be closing 50 schools. However, it is the first wave of the entire number of schools that are to be closed in Chicago. And that number is 129. 129 schools are in the crosshairs of the mayor of the city of Chicago to close. 100 schools have already been closed in Chicago since 2001. And almost more than 90% of these students are African American and Latino. The picture in Chicago with respect to public education for Black and Latino children is mirrored in other major cities. In Detroit, since 2005, 130 schools have been closed, and more than 40 in 2010, just 3 years ago. And there are more coming. No one has said yet how many more schools are going to be closed in Detroit. In Philadelphia, 44 schools are to be closed. And more than two dozen others will be undergoing what they call changes. In Washington, D.C., 20 schools are to be closed. 23 schools already were closed 4 years ago. In New York City, 22 more schools will be closed this year. That is on top of, and get ready for this, on top of 142 schools shut down or phased out under Mayor Bloomberg. That's since 2002. In Newark, six more schools are going to be closed. This is the pattern. The pattern is to shut down the schools, which is to say, you destabilize a community. You deliberately destabilize a community. Of course, the explanation is that these cities are financially strapped, and consolidating the schools would be a way of saving money or shutting them down altogether because they are, quote, underperforming, unquote. So the way you fix underperformance of a school is you just shut it down. And the implicit message is, if you value your children and you see the pattern, we shutting down the schools, if you value your children, you'll get busy trying to find a private school to put them in. But in any event, you will read the message correctly, and the message is, don't look to the city as a provider of education for your children. And isn't it extraordinary that almost all of the schools, almost 100% of them, that are targeted for shutting down are in communities of color? Now, it is incomprehensible that the Justice Department hasn't seen this to be a major issue. Just today, this very day as we're talking right now, there are lawyers in court in Chicago fighting. They're associated with the University of Chicago Law School. They couldn't be with us because of time issues, but we'll be talking with them. They're the ones who are fighting and litigating in behalf of the school system of Chicago and the parents of the school children of Chicago. The Justice Department clearly should see that this is a deliberate act to deprive children of a quality education. This action has not come about as a result of years and years of dialogue with teachers and parents, or it hasn't come about as a result of a protracted study period where they say, look, these are the challenges that we have, and how could we work together to solve whatever it is they say they need to solve? This is just an arbitrary decision. We shut down the schools. And they know, more than likely because the leadership is so ineffective, that they are not likely to encounter any opposition legislatively. And so said, so done. This is why the teachers union now is undertaking, it is so sad, undertaking the political task of growing leadership that has some degree of courage, that it has some degree of loyalty to the community. How tragic is that? And this is the president's backyard. Now, what's behind all of this? I talked about it before, but it is important to tell you again. When schools close, it is a telltale sign that the destabilization of a community is well underway. These are the pillars of community stability, to the extent that we have it. But when the socializing institutions of any community are systematically removed or shut down, it is a message for the people in that community to pack up and get out, because it could only go even worse than that. You look at these communities and you see a systematic removal of the socializing institutions. And they will all show similar characteristics. They all show similar signs of wear and deterioration, and in some places, completely not functioning. So all across the country, this is what I'm trying to say. If you look at Chicago as a as a case study all across the major urban areas in this country, you find this is a coordinated effort. It's racist as hell, and it is a coordinated effort. It is an open attack on these communities. Why? Because it is where Detroit is right now. Detroit, as you know, we talked about it here on this program, is under the control of a manager, a state-appointed manager. It is bankrupt. Literally, it has become something of a ghost town because all of the socializing and all of the essential elements of a stable community no longer exist. The people are gone now. They're totally gone. And although Detroit is in crisis financially, it is music to some people's ears. This is exactly what they desired as a result. Detroit is wide open for the taking. The people's misery, hey, that's their problem. A new group will come in now that the city is wide open for the taking. The developers, the real estate developers will now come and reclaim territory, reclaim the turf. And they will get it for a song because the city is in such distress. They will give it to anybody who shows up with a couple of dollars and say, let me have 10 acres over here, or let me take that building over there that used to be a great high school architecturally. It has such incredible features. You could easily turn that into a great condo. They have planned these things long ago. When schools are shut down, and the parents have to move. They've got to move. They cannot stand just the stress of having to find a new place to put their children, and then the children have to be carted around like luggage on a bus someplace. No parent who really wants the best for their child would consign a child to that kind of a so-called educational experience. And in Chicago, as is New York, Newark, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Detroit, and other major cities where this very phenomenon is happening, the real estate people are hard at work. They already have their sights on complete neighborhoods, contiguous land turf where they intend to take these things over. So the educational piece is essential. And this is why Rahm Emanuel is doing it. This is why it started, in fact, under Mayor Koch in New York City. This is how they do it. It is the reason why now in Harlem, you can't live in Harlem unless you have a couple of million dollars. If you had told the average Harlemite that 10 years ago, they laugh you in your face. They'll laugh at you. What are you talking about? Now, to get a shell, just a shell of a building, it will cost you about $2 to $3 to $4 million in Harlem. So the systematic emptying of our communities is happening under educational, quote, reform, unquote. And this is the gift of Barack Obama. Barack Obama's education secretary, the person who is the number one person in charge of educational policy in the United States, is right out of Chicago. He and Rahm Emanuel, Barack Obama, and others, they know each other very well because they worked with each other before. And although, of course, as I remarked here, the Secretary of Education needs an education. He does not even have a doctorate degree. He has only a bachelor's, but you could get to be Secretary of the State. You could get to be Secretary of State with very few qualifications. Why not put Secretary of Education in the same way? And his number one priority is to assist the charter school movement. That's where he comes out of. That's his political circle. And his job under the aegis of the Obama administration is to see to it that great strides are made to shut down as many public schools as possible in these selected areas across the country in order to assist the retaking and the gentrification by real estate developers, people with tons and tons of money. As we speak, Washington, D.C. is the height of that example. These schools that were shut down in Washington, D.C. immediately were gobbled up by developers who had made substantial contributions to the Obama administration and administrations even before that. Washington, D.C. doesn't look anything like anybody remembers Washington, D.C. It is now almost 3/4 or maybe more than that gentrified. The blacks who lived in Washington, D.C. have had to find someplace else to go. As they say, it's not where you go, it's just that you can't stay here. And this president is facilitating the two evils, the destruction of black communities and the destruction of the educational futures of black children and Latino children. It's a disgrace. And he ought to be called out on it. And on that alone, he should absolutely. I don't care whether they impeach him or not. It's a disgrace to do that. These are very ambitious people. As any parent, you have good reason to be ambitious about your child. You would want an education for a child, no matter whether you have money or don't. But this is the nefarious way in which the political structure gets what it wants, does what it wants, with absolute immunity and absolute impunity. They get away with it. I go back to the city of Chicago for one moment just to underscore this last point. It is not just the children. The school system in Chicago, which is the third largest school district in the nation with more than 400,000 students, is also historically the one major avenue of self-elevation for working black people, and that is teaching, which in the African-American community historically has been a very noble tradition. The average teacher is far more qualified than the Secretary of Education. It's required. And because of that, many of Chicago's communities were able to thrive because people were able to make a living and there was a relationship, just like the old days, where the people who are teaching you look like you. They share your history. They share your culture. They live in your neighborhood. But of course we have a very confused president who has no allegiances whatsoever to the African-American community. And he has been allowed to wreak havoc with it. And all across the nation, where you have mayors who, many of whom are Democrats, and a political infrastructure that is largely Democrat. This is a kind of genocide that is going on in our community. It won't be long before public school is just a figment of somebody's imagination. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back to subject two right after this. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. In about 20 minutes or so, the president is expected to give a speech at the National Defense University that's talking to people in the military academy of sorts about counterterrorism as part of an overall, an overall sketch that he's going to draw for them as to where he, as their commander-in-chief, intends to go with respect to U.S. military initiatives and national defense issues and so forth. And he's expected to touch on a couple of things. The speech is not yet available, but I'll be listening to it when it is available. And he's expected to touch on things that we are eager to hear about. Well, it's all part of the president's newly found desire to be transparent. And in this newfound spirit of transparency, he has admitted that the drone attacks actually killed 4 Americans, not 3. He has decided that he will be far more forthright about some of the initiatives undertaken by the United States with respect to defense and counterterrorism. Well, that's all nice. That's very, very good. Just yesterday, an Associated Press report said that 5 men were identified by the U.S. as linked to the September attack just last year on a diplomatic mission in Benghazi, though they remain at large as the FBI seeks to gather sufficient evidence for a civilian trial. I'm reading from the story verbatim. According to the Associated Press, the 5 individuals thought to be responsible for the attack, in which 4 were killed, including U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens, could be taken into custody by the U.S. military, though sufficient proof seems lacking to try them in court. The suspects are thought to be members of Ansar al-Sharia, a Libyan militia group whose fighters were seen near the U.S. diplomatic facility in Benghazi just prior to the assault. At least some of the suspects have been in contact with previously identified regional jihadists, including al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Well, I'll read one more paragraph. A senior Obama administration official has told the AP that the FBI identified several individuals that may either have information or may have been directly involved in the attack. However, per that official, a unilateral military mission to extract the suspects without Libya's cooperation is thought to be potentially damaging to relations. Now, I'm reading this because obviously it was fed to the news outlet, the Associated Press, exactly how the administration wants to position itself. But what is this indicating is that the president is, in fact, increasingly up a creek, and he probably is getting pressure even from within that his administration needs to do something, because its relationship with Congress is bad, and it's losing a lot of political currency even with the community that so far has staunchly supported him. But there's still a bunch of, you know, lies and misdirections, purposeful misdirections, in order to keep us hopeful that the president would have some way of turning around so that before he leaves office, he could actually accomplish something in the public good. But in the first paragraph alone, we see the problem. And I read it again. Five men have been identified by the U.S. as a link to the September 12th attack on the diplomatic mission in Benghazi, Libya, though they remain at large as the FBI seeks to gather sufficient evidence for a civilian trial. Right there is a huge clue as to how deceptive this administration has been, how deep the propaganda has gone. The mission, the diplomatic mission that they refer to in Benghazi, does not exist. It never did exist as a diplomatic mission, but they had all media, myself included, saying this was a diplomatic mission. Not a diplomatic mission at all. But it is a very, very important part of what constitutes the interests of the Republicans about getting to the root of what happened in Benghazi. The Democrats and the Republicans are avoiding a very salient truth about what happened in Benghazi. And what happened in Benghazi, you can say, we could start with that building that the United States insists was a diplomatic mission. And we can start asking, why was the ambassador there when his diplomatic mission is actually in Tripoli? The president is in a bad way. He has lost faith, or the Congress has lost faith with him in being honest and above board. His entire administration has been operating like a bunch of clandestine, characters, cloak and dagger stuff. They're hiding this and hiding that, and only under pain, even under pain of subpoena, as we saw yesterday. They're not talking. So what the president does, and that's what is happening today, is that they throw people off the scent by saying, here, take this little piece of bait. The president is going to be talking about counterterrorism, and everybody salivates. Oh, what are we going to learn? You're not going to learn anything. But it will take the pressure off of where the focus is now, and it would allow the president and his minions to construct an alternate reality and see if they bite on that. Benghazi is very important, and the Republicans are correct in seeking answers, but they too are lying about what the true intention is and what the true questions are. We will get to that on this very program. It requires a lot of time, which we don't have today. But I wanted to pull your ear to this, because this is what's going to happen. You check in with the evening news today, and you will see the president looking very, well, presidential, very commander-in-chief. The environment, remember I said these things are very important. Here he will be filmed. He will be shown in the midst of military types as a commander-in-chief. And therefore, whatever pronouncements he makes in that environment, just the visual of it is itself very important. It adds credibility to him, and credibility is what he lacks. So the people who craft the image of the president, symbolism is extremely important. I've said that before. So they've crafted an extraordinarily wonderful environment for the president to be seen in his position of commander-in-chief, talking with uniformed people, looking all military and wonderful, and he's not going to lie to them. Is he? These are the people who, should he declare war? Of course, he has declared war, but he really hasn't, has he? But we are about to learn that, in fact, the president has extended the involvement of the United States in that part of the world for at least 10 to 20 more years. This president, who does not believe in war, who believes in diplomatic resolution. We will learn that. But for the moment, it is imperative that we visually relate to what he looks like today when he's shown before the people, the troops, if you will, that he commands, and making very profound statements as the President of the United States and their Commander-in-Chief. And for transparency, see how many ticks he gets? He gets a lot of ticks. As Commander-in-Chief and as President, he is laying out in transparent fashion where the United States is headed with respect to its military involvements. We have a little bit of time, but certainly we can have some questions at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. So we will tease the question for you to pay attention. What is the significance of Benghazi? What is it that we really need to know? What should we really understand about Benghazi? And why this administration is so devoted to just applying whatever clouds and opaque paint that they could find to just cover this whole thing up? Why should we continue to try to understand the significance of the attack on the so-called diplomatic mission? It's not a diplomatic mission, but the attack on this building in Benghazi, Libya. Why is that important? And why is it that the major media are not asking the questions that need to be asked? It's also about where was the president on the night that this attack was occurring. Of course it involves Hillary Rodham Clinton. Of course, as Secretary of State, she knows a thing or two about this. But both the Republicans and the Democrats, even as they struggle over this issue about Benghazi and hearings need to be held to find out why the ambassador died, the question really is, why was the ambassador there? Why would the ambassador be in Benghazi, where he's not assigned, but he's assigned in Tripoli? Now there you have a diplomatic mission. What's in Benghazi? And what was he doing there? And why is it that there's so much effort and energy going into not telling us, not telling anybody, what that building was for, what the building was about, what the ambassador's mission was, why he was there? The answers are there. I mean, I've seen the answers, and they make perfect sense. And we will be talking about that on this program. So Pay attention, please. When you see the news today and you see our commander-in-chief looking very commandery. Winston from Brooklyn. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Winston?
Yes, hi.
Hello.
Yes, this is your truth?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, you sounded over the phone. So your truth, yes, it's in reference to why they're covering up Benghazi?
Yes.
Right. Well, to me, it appears obviously this was something that it was bungled. And the president doesn't have a leg to stand on, so they have no other choice at this point but to cover it up. And clearly that's what they're in the process of doing. From my understanding, there's a whistleblower, so I don't know how they're going to handle that particular person.
Even the whistleblower isn't talking about it. It is so hot, even the whistleblower isn't talking about it.
Well, in that case, Utrice, they're going to feed the public the storyline. They're going to feed us the storyline. The media is going to go along with the storyline, and he's going to somewhat, to a certain degree, escape. And the only reason why I'm saying that, Utrice, is that he's such an important part of the power structure. I agree with you when you were saying they may impeach him. But the only thing I'm wondering, I would think impeach him only in reference to embarrassing him, but not in reference to going all the way, because he is a very important part of this power structure.
I agree with you. They will make the noise, and they will even make motions that that's where they headed, only to have it on record that they did not tolerate the clandestine operations, both domestic and foreign, of this administration. I agree with you.
Yes, because like I was saying, Utrice, I mean, he's such an important role to the power structure. He has the right face color at this particular time in America and in the world. So, and he's more than willing to take his directives, and he's going to do it with fervor.
Yes, indeedy. Thank you so much, Winston,
for
calling.
Thank you, Utrice. I love
you. Thank you. Thank you. Love you, too. Listen, remember we say here, all that you are shown is not all that you should see. There's much more to it. All that you hear is not all that is to be learned. So you begin to accept right off the bat there is something else. There's some other reason why they think it is important for me to see this. And you start thinking, what could it be? We will be talking about this in great detail next week because it requires a great deal of time. But I just brought this up today to show you what is going on in two critical areas. And the common denominator is Barack Obama. Under Barack Obama, we are witnessing the destruction of our communities via the destruction of education. Public education for our children. That's very, very important. There's no way he can dance around that. That is the plan. That was the plan, and it remains the plan in Chicago and all of these major cities, which is a way of emptying the cities. You know, they politely call them now urban areas. And we will no longer have inner city areas because the black folks and the Latinos would have been driven away. Go someplace else. We don't care where you go. Just get out. And education, the attack on education is serving these two purposes, which are working hand in glove with each other. The other piece, the symbolism of the president's speech this afternoon in just a matter of about 5 minutes or so, is meant to recoup some degree of authority and some degree of turf that he had lost, because he'd lost quite a bit of credibility with these scandals that are looming in his administration. This is how the administration, his handlers, are trying to regain some ground and trying to put a presidential tone back onto him as a man in charge, although the administration shows in so many ways that it is actually out of control. So this is the way, visually, you will hear that, and you will hear him speaking. He is not going to be talking to these graduates the way he talked to the graduates of Morehouse. He's actually going to talk to them almost as peers, as people who are equals almost in the issue of policymaking. You should hear the difference in tone. Just check it out. This is the president discussing the national security with graduates. He certainly would not have said this at Morehouse. So take a look at that, and we will get to it in greater detail next week. Tomorrow, Professor Gerald Horn from the University of Houston joins us again for part two, and he wants to mix it up a bit. He's going to be talking about the wonderful world, the entire world, and what our understanding is, our political understanding of how movements influence each other. Some of the domestic issues that we are suffering actually could have been influenced by events occurring outside of the country and vice versa. So you will want to stay tuned for that. And I do want to encourage you to place that call. Please, we try to get these children from Haiti whose visas have already been approved. All they have to do, there's no cost to this. They just need to get these children here. Please call Representative Frederica Wilson at 202-225-4506 and ask her politely, or ask her office, to please impress upon President Obama that he should tell the Department of Homeland Security that they should expedite the Haitian Family Reunification Program now. These children, more than 11,000 of them, are waiting and is incredible distress. Their families here are waiting to receive them, and they too are legitimate people here. They are documented, and all papers are already in a row and signed off on and approved. But for 2.5 years already, they've been waiting, and we need them to expedite that now. The number 202-225-4506. Representative Frederica Wilson. Her district has the most Haitians in the United States, and that's why she would be very influential on this matter. So thank you for the privilege of your company. See you tomorrow.